This is your manual to becoming the amazing homeschool mom you were called to be. You're listening to Called to Homeschool, episode number 69, Parents Who Know, Strategies to Address Porn in Your Family. Hey everybody, welcome back. We're here with episode number 69, and today I've got my husband with us again. We had him a few episodes ago, it was a while ago. Talking about teaching to your kids about sex, and today we're going to delve into the topic of pornography. So we're happy to have him, and I love having my husband with us. It's always fun for me. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do for those that didn't listen to the previous one.
Okay. Well, it's great to be here with you. I love being able to talk with families and be able to discuss these difficult topics, and it's always a pleasure to be able to do it next to my wonderful wife. And so just by way of introduction, where I'm at, I work as a clinical mental health counselor, and I've been doing that for over a decade. I'm also a certified sex therapist. And so throughout my work, I've done a lot of work. Obviously, if you listen to the last podcast that I was on, you know, we talked a lot about sex education and sexuality in general. But a lot of the work that I do as well is geared around pornography and helping youth, children, and adults work through problems that they may have with pornography. And so, in fact, I've probably been doing that longer than most of the other things that I've been doing in therapy. And so I'm just really happy to be here, happy to help. Just a little bit of my background as well. Sorry, I'm going to mute my computer because people are...
He's popular.
People are texting me as we do this, and it's distracting. But yeah, I've been doing this for 10 years, and then as a certified sex therapist, I'm part of ASECT, which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. Up until about COVID hit, I was the Utah section head for ASECT. And so just kind of helping out with all of those here in the state of Utah. Everything's kind of on pause now, so who knows where we're at with those things. But like I said, I've been doing this for over a decade. I've worked with probably close to the into the thousands now in terms of clients with pornography, and love being able to do this work. Most people think I'm weird because I love talking about porn. So we should have fun today. Let's jump in.
All right. So I talked to some of the moms that I associate with in my homeschool group and some friends of mine, and just gathered some questions that other parents have and questions that I have as well. And these are probably some of the most common questions that he would get also as a parent or from parents. And also some of these came from teenagers, which I loved as well because I like their perspective on this topic too. So let's just dive right in though, but on why is porn even bad and what is it?
Okay, so it seems like that would be a simple answer, right? What is porn? But if you really think about it, it can take a lot of different forms. A lot of different types of media could be considered pornography. And my approach to it is a very individualistic approach. I work with people based on what their values are. And so for one person, you know, something might not be considered porn that would be considered porn for another person. So the first thing I would say with that in terms of what is it, that is a really individual and even personal question that as parents, you could sit down and talk about what your values are and be able to get on the same page about that. You know, for some people, a Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue could be considered pornographic. For others, they might not. You know, other people might not think that there's anything wrong with it. Or a Michelangelo painting. Yeah, I do think a couple of years ago, a teacher got fired. I think it might have been in the state of Utah because they were showing art paintings.
Really? Wow.
And because they had nudity, the kids thought it was porn and they eventually got fired. So, you know, again, even amongst adults, we have lots of questions about what it might be. The typical answer a lot of times would be any kind of media that you're using for your own sexual arousal and gratification. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, it can come in a lot of different forms, but I think more than anything, it's about the intent more than it often is even about the content itself. Now, that's kind of in a general sense. Obviously, there's hardcore pornography, which is extremely sexually explicit, and the intent really is for sexual gratification and for those purposes. And so it gets a little bit easier in certain ways to define what it is. But there are a lot of other areas. You know, a bra and panties advertisement in a newspaper or whatever. It's not quite so black and white in terms of how to answer that.
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, even as a mom, I don't think that I'd want my son necessarily flipping through, you know, a Victoria's Secret catalog. But I don't know that I'd consider it pornography.
Yeah.
It's just more of like an uncomfortable, I'd rather you not look at that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so these are great conversations. And a lot of the stuff that we're talking about today is hopefully that something you can take as parents, talk about it, explore your values, and talk and go to your children with it, mm-hmm. have those conversations and share those values with them.
That's good. And why is it bad? Did you talk about that?
Not yet. Let's talk about why porn is bad. So my perspective and from what I've seen, there are a few aspects. One of the major aspects is that, again, if you're doing something that goes against your values, if you're using pornography and it goes against your values, it's not going to leave you feeling fulfilled. There's going to be emptiness and a lot of times we can start to see even other, you know, depression and anxiety caused because of these behaviors that go against your values. So that's a big one. For a lot of people, it's spiritual values. Sometimes it's relational, you know, emotional, whatever it is. Again, if your behavior contradicts your values, that can create problems. A couple of other more, you know, even more specific ones. And if I can share a statistic with you, in 2016, there was a popular porn site that directed people to other pornography sites, and they did their year in review. During their, during their year in review, they added up all the time that was spent in 2016 by people looking at porn. Just through their site.
In one year.
The amount of time that it added up to was 5,246 centuries worth of time. In 1 year.
So
think
awful.
About that for a second.
Centuries. 5,000 centuries?
Over 5,000 centuries worth of time spent if you added up all of the hours of all of the people who were looking at porn during that year. And so one of the things that I talk with people, and I share that statistic quite a bit, is that think of the amount of time that we're wasting just with pornography in and of itself. And I say, I throw out the hypothetical, what if all those people just cut all of their porn use in half and did some sort of service or something good? How different would the world be just with that based on the amount of time that is spent? So again, it's a huge waste of time, and that can be problematic for sure for a lot of people. The other thing too that I found, particularly as a sex therapist, is pornography is really horrible sex education. The things that are conveyed, particularly when you're talking about more hardcore pornography, are attitudes, are behaviors, are things that are just not conducive to healthy sexuality. And so again, particularly if you've got teenagers or young adults who don't know a whole lot about sex in general and are going to pornography to learn about it, they're getting a lot of misinformation, a lot of things that are not backed up, you know, in terms of research about how sexuality is. And I'll be honest, that keeps me in business as a sex therapist, because then I have people come in and I have to kind of help them understand why their sex life is different than what's being conveyed in pornography. Mm-hmm. But I also think we have an issue at times too, that sometimes we're not as good with our sex education, whether within our own homes, mm-hmm. or out in the world. And so a lot of teenagers are turning to that for legitimate questions, and they're looking for answers. And unfortunately, it's just not a healthy, healthy way to.
Do you think also, though, that as a reason that it's bad are things that it can also lead to? There's a lot of studies, from what I understand, of, you know, people that are heavily using pornography often are those that are going to then go out and abuse others, or, you know.
So that is a great question. And, you know, there's a lot of research that can kind of point to one way or the other. Now, obviously, from what I understand in the research that I've read, if someone has predispositions to be abusive, to be violent, to be aggressive towards women, the pornography will definitely add fuel to that fire. But we do want to be careful, because pornography use is happening to some of the greatest people who are around. They're happening to our children, to our, you know, our brothers, our sisters. You know, there are a lot of great people who are struggling with pornography. And I think sometimes we have this idea that, okay, if they're really struggling with porn, it's going to lead them to being some sort of sexual deviant. And I have not seen that to necessarily be the case. Mm-hmm. You hear the stories about Ted Bundy, and he blames everything that he's done mm-hmm. on pornography. I don't think it was the pornography that turned Ted Bundy into Ted Bundy. Mm-hmm. I think Ted Bundy had some major issues, psychiatric and otherwise, and the pornography obviously didn't help. And there are things that are definitely detrimental with pornography. I think objectifying women, objectifying just people in general. Some of the, you know, again, the things that are conveyed in porn can often be aggressive or even violent, and you can, you know, that can start to change attitudes, you know, a little bit. But I haven't seen it. You know, we kind of have that idea it's going to turn someone into a monster. 99% of the time, 99.9% of the time, I would say that that's false.
That's interesting. Thank you. All right. So tell me a little about the work that you do with the clients that you have, adults and teenagers, and who else you work with.
So yeah, when I have people come in, and again, it's teenagers, and I've worked with both boys, girls, men, women, pretty much it runs the gambit. I just talked with someone recently, there was a 7-year-old boy who was, you know, kind of getting caught up in a little bit of it. And the mother was talking to me about that. And so I've been able to work with, you know, quite a few people in this. My approach to pornography when I work with people is a little bit different than maybe what you see or hear about as we talk about pornography. A lot of times when we talk about pornography, we talk about it in terms of pornography addiction or mm-hmm. sex addiction and those kind of things. And I have a little bit, well, actually I have quite a distinct difference in terms of my view when we talk about pornography. One of the reasons for that, and I know there's a lot of great work that's done by those who, you know, in the porn addiction or the sex addiction field, and you know, bless all of them for the hard work that they're doing. They're in the trenches as well. Mm-hmm. I have a few concerns just about the terminology of addiction, and just logistically for me as a therapist, in my diagnostic manual, and it's a pretty significant diagnostic manual. It's right here. It's, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. But nowhere in our manual of diagnoses is there a diagnosis for sex addiction or pornography addiction. Hmm. So if someone comes and says, well, Rich, am I addicted to porn? You know, am I a sex addict? Which I've had people do that. I have no way of really knowing how to diagnose that. Hmm. And so, and I also think that sometimes when we turn to the addiction speak or terminology, it has a tendency to focus, to sometimes pull people into more shameful feelings. And
also something that you can never overcome.
Yeah, that once an addiction or once an addict, always an addict.
Yeah.
And that concerns me, in that I've worked with people and I've seen them be able to cut pornography out of their lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, does that mean that they'll never struggle with porn again, or that there will never be temptation? That's not what we're saying. But again, if it's always an addict, then that's something that's always hanging over your head. So my approach to it is I try to define it in terms of the levels of involvement with pornography and kind of go based on just different levels, starting from, you know, do you just accidentally come across porn? And what do you do if that happens? Is it just occasional use? Is it frequent use? And is it more of a compulsive use? Or maybe we could even, you know, start to call that an addiction at that point. Again, although it's hard to know all of the diagnostic criteria. This, the distinction with these different levels, I think, is really important. If I'm working with someone who's using pornography compulsively day in and day out for hours a day, we're going to use similar tools, but our approach to it's going to be differently than someone who's looking at pornography once every couple of months. Mm-hmm. If I've got someone who's using porn every day, my first goal is to maybe get them to look at porn every other day.
Oh, okay.
That's, you know, if I take that approach with the person who's looking at it every couple of months, you know, that's just not going to
make a difference.
Yeah, it's not going to work. And so, and again, if it's every couple of months, that's a completely different thing than more likely than not someone who may be using that porn daily to cope with other emotions or other mm-hmm. difficult challenges in their lives. And so again, we need to kind of look at that and understand it. And I will tell you again, more than 90% of the people that I've worked with fall in between the occasional and the frequent use, and they kind of just bounce back and forth mm-hmm. between the two of those. I have rarely seen someone who I would classify as so compulsive about the pornography that it would be an addiction.
Interesting. Thank you. So what about girls and pornography? We always talk about it mainly as a guy thing. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that to be true, or do you see the same in girls? I know there's trends now.
That's a great question. For years, it was like, well, porn is just a guy thing. And it's easier, particularly if we're talking about visual pornography, for guys to be pulled into that mm-hmm. because of testosterone in our brains and in our bodies, we're more visually attracted to sexual images and mm-hmm. cues. And so that visual type of pornography, you know, obviously has a tendency to pull a lot more men in that way. But I have seen women who struggle with pornography, and, you know, their struggles are just as real and, you know, just as much as men who are struggling with it. I will also say that the pornography industry is looking for ways to start marketing towards women. Mm-hmm. You start to see more of, you know, female erotica or, you know, feminine porn and those kind of things that are marketed towards mm-hmm. towards women. Usually with that, you see things more that have storylines okay. and a little bit more connect, you know, something that appeals
more
to
emotional.
the emotions mm-hmm. and yet is still pornographic. And so, you know, the thing that I've heard is that for the most part, porn has the market on men and on the male sex because we're visual and there's so much of it out there, but they are looking for ways to pull women in as well.
Well, one of the questions I had from a teenage girl, she mentioned just the concern with girls that would view it, would take that in and think that's the way I need to look and that's the way I need to act and that it could affect their behaviors in that way a lot of.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this again goes back to the idea of the messages and the behaviors that are conveyed with pornography can be detrimental. Mm-hmm. I often use the example of, you know, learning about sex from pornography is similar to learning how to drive by watching like the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah.
In that, you know, if you have children and they're learning how to drive, we've got a 15-year-old who's learning how to drive now. I do not want him to drive like, I mean, unfortunately, he kind of drives like the Fast and the Furious movies. He's, you know, not as safe as I would want him to be. But no, you don't want to convey those things. And yeah, again, you see a lot of objectification and just a lot of messages that are not real in terms of what sexuality is like.
Yeah.
And so.
So as a parent, my child comes to me and I find out that they have viewed some sort of pornography. How should I react?
Great question.
Should I yell and scream?
You should definitely not yell and scream.
Okay.
and I've given a lot of a lot of talks on this. And so I'm going to, if you see me looking down, I'm going to some of my notes here on the PowerPoints. And I've kind of broken this down into the different types of use, whether accidental use, the occasional, the frequent, mm-hmm. or the compulsive use. And so again, if your child accidentally comes across, let me rephrase that. When your child accidentally comes across pornography, one of the most important things you can do, stay calm. Just take a deep breath. Don't yell at them. Don't shame them. Talk with them about it. You know, what can they learn from this mistake? Take some precautions. Maybe you've learned as a parent that you need to set up some filters or some passwords. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of times we just have no idea of how the pornography is getting in. And yeah. even the best parents with the, you know, the greatest intentions cannot completely cut out any opportunity of pornography unless you throw out, you know, all devices mm-hmm. and never connect to the internet.
Right.
And even then, depending on what
it
is,
house.
Yeah, they'll find it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Again, talk with your children about how that pornography made them feel. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times, you know, there might be some fear in there. There might be a little bit of excitement. There might be some funny feelings and they're not sure what to do with it. Mm-hmm. But just talk with them and let them know that it's okay that they're feeling the way that they are. Help them understand that their behavior wasn't like this horrible thing. It wasn't like they did anything wrong. They just came across it accidentally, and that those things are going to happen. And again, I would praise them for coming to you and telling you about their exposure.
Yeah.
And at that point, you can even talk about what they could do differently to avoid that exposure next time, if there's anything mm-hmm. that they can do. So that's if you come across it accidentally. Now, again, if you have occasional use, this is where someone is turning to pornography intentionally. They're looking at things and it's occasional. The first few things, stay calm. Don't yell and don't shame them. Those things will drive your children away further and further if those have a tendency to happen. Assure your child that they are good people, but that this is a behavior that's not good, that it goes against your values, that it's something that is not healthy. Talk to them and try to identify how they're accessing the porn. How are they getting it? Is it coming in on a smartphone? Is it on a tablet? Is it on the family computer when everybody is gone? You know, just kind of identify when and how they're accessing that porn. And then it's good to discuss ways that you can protect them. Do we need to set up, you know, more filters? You know, a lot of people, I've talked with a lot of parents, and I'm more familiar with Apple products, so iPhones and stuff like that, where I'm like, well, let's just go look at the iPhone. Just based on what they have, there are parental settings that mm-hmm. are pretty good. And most parents don't even know that they're there.
Yeah.
And we can just go through that and in 5 minutes set up some things where there's restriction of certain content and those kind of things that would make it more difficult for porn to come in mm-hmm. or for them to access that pornography. One of the other things that I talk with people about too is turning in your devices at night.
Yeah.
Can your children turn in their phones? And I will tell you, for a lot of reasons, it is a good rule to have within your home to have your children turn in their phone. I'll tell you that a lot of the people, a majority, probably close to 70 or more percent of people that I work with, if they would just put their phone in another room from 9 o'clock on, it would cut out 80, 90% of the pornography mm-hmm. use that they have. And so again, being able to turn that in, I think is a really good thing a rule to set up. It might be hard if you haven't done that for a while to get them to turn in their phones, but definitely something that's good. Aside from pornography, just along those lines with the phone, one of the things that I've seen with teenagers is that their friends are texting them all through the night.
Yeah.
And sometimes their friends are texting them that they're feeling suicidal or that they're doing all of these things. And that is a lot of pressure to put on a teenager in the middle of the night. And those, you know, those kind of text messages, while I think it's good that the teenagers are reaching out to each other, I worry about my teenage clients reaching out to their friends for advice, because it's not always the best advice.
Right. Yeah.
And so, again, if we can help them with that, that, you know, and just, you know, here's the rule. We don't have the phones in our room. All of a sudden they're getting better sleep, which is good for their mental health and really can help in terms of the pornography.
So do you think that, you know, we talk about filters and those kinds of things. Do you think it's better for parents to lock down the technology, give them no access to internet, or to give them the freedom and trust them? Where's
great,
that balance?
Great question. And I think a lot of it depends on their level of use. If they're getting really into the frequent use, and even if it's compulsive, I think locking it down for a certain amount of time is good. Mm-hmm. It's a break from that. Whereas if they've been using it compulsively, they're feeling that need and desire mm-hmm. to do that. But in general terms, again, you can lock down all of that stuff until they're 18 and they go to college
and then
they have Wi-Fi.
Right.
The best thing to do is to be able to teach them and to help them understand what they can do to choose not to look at pornography. Mm-hmm. That goes back to your conversation about what your values are. Mm-hmm. I mean, if their values are, no, I don't want to look at pornography, you know, then they can work on those things to be able to overcome that. If they're like, I don't care, I don't think there's anything wrong with porn, I mean, you can lock it down while they're minors, but they're going to go away and they're going to have their opportunity to look at porn. So it really is kind of a balance there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then one other thing that I encourage parents to do would be to set up times to check in about how they're doing with porn. Don't make every conversation with your child be about pornography. You know, there's so much else to them and to your relationship. And sometimes it's easy to just be like, oh, well, how's it going?
Yeah.
Are you looking at porn? Was it a good day or a bad day? What about now? And what about now? Oh, you're on your phone. What are you doing? And again, it creates almost this obsession with pornography rather than saying, okay, let's just take a day of the week or an evening or whatever, and we'll sit down for 20 minutes and we'll check in and talk about how you're doing. Mm-hmm. So again, that's what I would do in terms of the occasional use. We okay to go on to frequent use or?
We just have, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And I'll go through this quickly. I know there's just a lot here. Okay. So again, the same thing, if it's intensive use, stay calm, don't yell, don't shame them. You could find ways to limit their usage temporarily. Mm-hmm. You know, again, talk with them about how they're feeling about the porn, or their feelings of hopelessness or worthlessness. Reassure them that they can overcome this. This is probably a great time to find professional help. Get them in with a counselor who can help them.
He's a good one.
And there are good ones out there, but someone who can teach them some tools to be able to stay away from pornography. Don't assume that the pornography is going to stop overnight. You know, we want to look at progress. We want to see, you know, even slow improvement. And then really start teaching about healthy sexuality. That's going to be so important. Teach them that the porn is bad, but sex isn't.
Yeah.
And so.
So this was one of the questions I had for one of the teenage girls. She mentioned that often she sees the problem where kids are, they're searching for answers to questions and they're just curious, and that's how it can often begin. And so I think it's so important for parents to really be a place that they can come to be open and honest and a communication source that's comfortable for them.
Yeah. The worst thing that can happen, well, one of the worst things that can happen is that if a child has questions about sex, that they're going to go Google whatever that question is. And a lot of times that's how some of the pornography gets started with children. Mm-hmm. And so again, if you can be their source of truthful, healthy, comfortable sex education, you know, you can come and ask me any question you want. What is this? What is that? Mm-hmm. I'd much rather have parents together sit down and Google something, even if it comes up with garbagey stuff, but be able to navigate some of that and figure that out so they can explain it. Then have a child go and try to do that.
Right.
And if you don't feel comfortable with it, reach out to us. I'll get you all the answers.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy to provide answers that way.
Okay. So let's talk about sexting.
Let's talk about sexting. How fun, you know, and you might wonder, well, what does this have to do with pornography? But I will say that a lot of times this is much more common. And I would say particularly for girls and teenage girls, in terms of having boys asking for them to send pics or nudes or, you know, whatever it is that they're calling it, and asking for for sexual pictures of themselves. Mm-hmm. Again, so much of this goes on. It's so pervasive. But if you really get down to the legalities of it all, if someone takes a picture of themselves naked, they've just created child porn if they're under 18. Mm. If they send it to someone, they've just distributed child porn. And if you're caught with it, it's possession of child porn. Now, this happens so much amongst teenagers. You know, this don't use fear tactics, but I think we sometimes forget how serious this can be because, again, the pervasiveness of it all, it just happens so often. Again, I don't know of teenagers who are getting, you know, thrown into jail for child pornography creation and distribution. However, if people are using it in malicious ways, mm-hmm. there's a lot of trouble that they can get into. And so helping your children really understand that this is inappropriate in any way. And I think it's easier and easier to think, oh, well, it's not that big a deal.
It's just one person.
It's just one person. Right. Or, you know, if you go to any popular Instagram account or whatever, half of the people are wearing little to no mm-hmm. clothes anyways.
It's true. And so it's strategic hand placement in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of become the norm to do that. And it kind of is like, well, it's not that big a deal. And a lot of them think nobody else will know. Mm-hmm. And, but I'll tell you, there is so much heartache and so many problems that can come through sexting. And sometimes we forget to talk about this. It's a lot easier to talk about pornography or other things, but really have conversations with them about the types of pictures they're having and they're sending with mm-hmm. their phones. Be careful with social media apps. Snapchat, you know, is a big one where pictures can be sent
and they disappear.
And then right? they're supposed to disappear. Mm-hmm. And yes, they let you know if someone takes a screenshot or a screen grab of whatever it is, but still, you know, all of those things can have a tendency to be dangerous.
I like that how you had written there, if you never send an inappropriate picture, you'll never be in danger of having it go public. I think that's an important thing for kids to understand, that if they do, the opposite is true, right?
Yeah. And if somebody's soliciting that from you, whether it's a friend at school, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a stranger, it's always good. Teach your kids to come and talk with you about it, to tell mm-hmm. them no, come and talk with you about it. If you have to get the school involved, you can do that. If you have to get the police involved, you can do that. If those texts keep coming and the harassment, particularly if they're from strangers, that's where, I mean, it's scary no matter what, but there are a lot of really scary predators out there who are going after young teenage girls, 12, 13 years old and older.
Yes, it's heartbreaking.
It is.
And that kind of goes into a lot of what's going on right now with the sex trafficking. And I know that's a whole nother ball game, but it's a really important topic as well. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I mean, yeah, there's so much that goes into it. I have a really good friend who's retired FBI who worked with crimes against children for years. And we've already talked a little bit about this with pornography, but his counsel too, I remember him saying out and out that no good parent would ever allow their children to take their phone to bed overnight. And then he talked about horrific examples of boys and girls getting pulled into basically sex trafficking because someone asks for a picture and talks to me, you know, and they send a picture and then they get blackmailed, and I'm going to tell your parents and everybody else and show everybody else this picture if you don't do this and send me more and more. And it just becomes such an ugly, slippery slope that, again, if we can be aware of the social media and all of the media that our children are using as much as possible, help them understand the dangers that can be associated with this, that can go a long way in helping. There are obviously areas and groups of people who are trying to, you know, bring people in for sex trafficking, and there's so much that goes into that. But particularly within our homes and with media, if we can watch those things, watch those phones particularly, it can be helpful and to prevent as much of that as
possible. I think another common way kids have been accessing it lately is through video game systems as well, which we don't have in our home. I'm thankful for. I don't know if my kids are, but and that's just another thing to be aware of.
Yeah, anything that connects to the internet, and you'll be surprised what things do and even how much you have locked down. And but this app is okay, but all of a sudden there's a way to get onto the internet through this app. I mean, there's just a lot of it, you know, a lot of ways for that to come in. And again, some of the best prevention is to be able to have those open conversations with your children.
Right. Yeah. So next, as a parent, my biggest concern or question comes from like, okay, so my child comes to me and tells me that they have, you know, frequently been viewing pornography. What do I do to help them overcome this? What are some tips to get through this?
Great question. You know, and we talked about what to do as a parent to kind of handle that and approach that with them. And I am going to give you the most simplified, watered down version of what I do in terms of therapy, just so you kind of have an idea of my approach to it. And these are hopefully some simple things that you can do to implement as well. My biggest thing is that, so a lot of my therapy is based in cognitive behavioral techniques or therapy and philosophy. And so a lot of that is just about, okay, how do our thoughts and our attitudes determine or affect our emotions and our behavior? So in the simplest terms, I help clients recognize what their triggers are for pornography. You know, are there similar or situational things that make them more vulnerable, and being aware of that so that they're not stressing about it all throughout their lives. But, you know, this is when and where I'm the most vulnerable. We recognize those things. And then we really hit heavily on what are the excuses or justifications that you make to use porn. And again, I go back to values, because most of the people, if not all of them, that I am working with, at least currently, they don't want porn to be part of their lives.
Which is why they come to see you.
Which is why they're coming to see me. Some are dragged by their parents. But deep down, they don't want porn to be part of their lives. But in that moment when they're triggered, they'll start to make excuses and justifications to look at the porn. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's a lot of pretty common ones. I've heard, you know, the same things over and over for years. It's not that big a deal. Everybody else is doing it. It'll help me feel good. This will be the last time. And you can go on and on. And we talk about how those excuses are going to lead to acting out. Obviously, you've just given yourself permission to look at porn. So what we focus on is, okay, based on your values, are those excuses true? Oh, it's no big deal. No, it's a big deal for me. So we try to help them cognitively get to statements of truth, reasons not to look at porn rather than making all the excuses.
Like that. Yeah.
With the hope that if they practice that, that can start to become more and more automatic in their brains. If they're going to all of the reasons not to look at porn rather than the excuses, they can start to change their behavior. So yeah. And finally, what I do is once we kind of get through that and understand the cognitive part there, I have what I call the triple play that I just have. I have them do a few things each day, try to keep it simple, but if they can commit to a few things each day, if they're religious, if they have, you know, a religious background or
a core book
or religious philosophy. But yeah, we'll have, you know, read the Bible, read scriptures, if they're not religious, read something that's uplifting. Because rarely do we get a chance to just bring good, uplifting things into our lives. You know, I don't care if it's the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius from, you know, Roman times, or, you know, or just things, you know, maybe some self-help things that are positive and uplifting. So taking 15 minutes to read that, and then 3 times a day I have them practice, I don't look at porn because, and then come up with their statements of truth. And I want them to have 5 or 25 statements of truth that they can repeat to themselves, and have them do that 3 times a day. So every day they're saying 75 times, I don't look at porn, And then here are all these statements of truth and reasons not to. And then finally, to be able to find a way to connect with family or friends or just make a connection in some way. A lot of times, more often than not, pornography is a very solitary activity. Mm-hmm. You know, people withdraw, they pull away from.
Closed up in your bedroom.
Yeah, family, friends, you know, all of those kind of things. So if they can find a way to connect with someone, and it doesn't have to be, oh my gosh, come and talk with me because I'm about to look at porn. That's not what we're talking about, but just, you know, let's have those connections. Sit down, you know, talk with a parent, talk with siblings, talk with friends, but just have a way to find some good connection that can be beneficial as well. So I really have them practice that. And a lot of times if they can put those things into practice, we start to see a lot of good progress. Now, again, that's ultra simplified at this point. That's usually an hour and a half, 2 hours worth of sessions where we're talking about all these things and going into depth, but it's kind of a little preview of what I do.
That's great. Thank you. So where should kids go when they have questions or are curious?
That is great. And again, if you've gone to or listened to the podcast previously, I know that we addressed this a little bit, but it really is important for your children to understand that you are their source of sex education. And it's important for you to understand that you need to be their source of sex education and to be as comfortable as you possibly can with that. Otherwise, you know, you start to have young kids, if they can't ask you a question, they're going to go ask Siri or Alexa or Google or, you know, and a lot of times the answers that they're going to be that they get there will have a tendency to lead them to more
this
and more
just reminds me, I was having a conversation with Megan today at our park day, and she was talking about fears that moms are having about homeschooling. And she said this one mom was talking to her about how she just taught her child how to use a rifle and hunt. They went hunting and all this, you know, this complex, difficult thing where a gun is a very dangerous thing. And yet she was comfortable teaching her child that. And yet she wasn't comfortable teaching her child how to read or something, you know, that is not life-threatening, may seem hard and overwhelming. She said, how can you be comfortable with that, yet not this? And I feel like that's the same kind of thing. Like, you know, all the things that we can teach our children, yes, this feels scary and big and dangerous and whatever, but it's really important. And it needs to come from you and your own values.
And I'm going to correct you a little bit. A gun is not a scary, dangerous thing.
Oh, well, I disagree. But
it's... but like sexuality or like guns, I mean, it's obviously something you want to take serious. You want to be able to talk with your children about, but it's the use of those things that can cause pain and can cause harm, whether it's a firearm, whether it's a computer, whether it's sexuality, it's those things. And so again, as parents, we might feel that fear like, oh, I can't talk about sex, but we can. I mean, I'm guessing most of us had sex to have our children. So, I mean, that's not always the case anymore, but most of us, we, you know, we're at least familiar with it, but it is really crucial to be able to have those conversations. Your kids are going to ask you things. There are things that come up in TV shows and different things where they might wonder what something is. And again, if they're just Googling it, there could be a lot of detrimental things that are out there. And so I often encourage parents, I mean, at the very least, sit down together and be the ones to Google it and kind of search through it. I will tell you, while it's very crude and the language is very crude, but if you have questions about like, what is this or what is that? And I'm going to be honest, I'm a sex therapist and I've heard a lot of things. But there are still terms that come up that teenagers and young adults and people use. There is a place called Urban Dictionary that you can go to. And I will warn you, I mean, they are very crude and sometimes, you know, the definitions are not very good. But it'll give you a definition of what some of those things are. And I've gone to that various times when I've heard of something. I'm like, yeah, I'm not familiar with
that
term.
That's a new term to me. Yeah.
And so as parents, that is an option that at least it can give you some information about what they're talking about. And that way you can say, okay, well, so what they're talking about here is a slang term for this, and you can give them the information you're comfortable with them having. But please, please be their source of sexual information and education, their primary source. There are going to be other sources out there. The world is going to give them information, is going to educate them in certain ways.
Yeah, and this was one of the teenage girls that I was talking to today had this question particularly. And I loved the way she phrased it, where she said, I think a lot of boys, it starts because of curiosity and wondering what something is or how something works and what something means. And so they just go and search. And so she's like, I think most often they don't feel like they have a safe place to go and ask. And so that's where they go. And I know that that's probably true so often. And I hope that our kids will feel that we are a safe place and that they know that they can talk to us. And I think that happens with the way that we communicate and interact with them on these topics.
You know, and with that, you know, they may go search something not even knowing that it's sexual as well. And that's why it's always important to talk with them about what they should do if they come across something. And again, the easiest thing is just turn off the monitor and go talk with your parents.
Yeah.
I mean, keep it very simple. Man, if something comes up and you're uncomfortable, just turn off the monitor and go directly to your parents. If your parents are out, just turn the computer off. Don't let anybody else on it. But, you know, just be prepared that way. It's really the simplest and the easiest way. And then you can have discussions about that. Yeah. So
that's great. That's all the questions I have for you today. Do you have any other last minute things you feel like we didn't cover or tips?
No, I'm just going to say that as parents, I think, again, sometimes this feels daunting and scary, but if we can look at it as our privilege to be able to be a source of accurate, positive, truthful information about sexuality and really keep it positive, that sex is really a good thing. Again, sometimes it's used in bad ways. The pornography may not be good or is not good, but that sexuality is good. And we can convey that through our values and the discussions that we have with our children. And let's not be afraid of it. See it as a privilege to be able to talk about these things, be positive about it. And if we can do that, we're going to show more confidence. Our children are going to understand that. And hopefully they're going to come to us more and more as they have questions. So
thank you. Thanks so much for your time and your expertise. You're awesome.
You.
And thank you guys for tuning in today. We hope this was helpful for you. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Called to Homeschool. Be sure to subscribe, and we'd love to hear your comments or questions. You can find all our show notes on calledtohome.com.